Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you're frustrated with typical hunting and fishing magazines and tired of reading content, meant for guys that are up in the north or up in the Midwest, check out Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't fish or hunt in your home state. You can pick up a Great Days Outdoors Magazine subscription, and it will help you become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors Magazine can be found at your local Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, Bass Pro Shops, or you can save online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are a lot of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep-sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails, and recreational sites, 25 state parks, and wildlife management areas, too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. I'm your host, Joe Bayer, here today with my co-host, Butch Theory. Today, Butch, we're going to be talking about something nobody really wants to talk about, and that is what's going to happen to your land after you pass away. I've had this conversation with my wife. We've got a plan together. It's a simple plan, but we got a plan. Does make me feel good to know that, you know, we have that plan, and hopefully we don't need it for a long time, but you just never know. How are you feeling about it? You feel pretty confident in what's going to happen with your estate when you pass away?
Yeah, just recently we've been doing some moving things around, trying to get, we had another child. So now we have two little ones to care for. We've been doing a lot of this exact kind of stuff here recently, you know, estate planning, trust, trying to figure out what's best, wills, you know, there's so much to it, man. It seems like you almost have to be a lawyer to even know where to begin or what to do. I definitely feel more confident today than I did 6 months ago as far as my plan goes, you know, and what will happen to my stuff whenever something does happen. And yeah, it's going to happen eventually.
You know, it's funny you say it that way. And I know you're, you know, tongue in cheek when you say what's going to happen to my stuff, but it's not just about what's going to happen to your stuff. It's about making sure that the people that are still there are not burdened by your stuff.
Right.
And that they're not burdened by the complexity of what to do with it or the lack of
preparation,
any direction on what to do with it. I think you're doing your family a disservice to not have a plan for them. So today we're going to be getting into trust and estate planning specifically for landowners. There's some specific things that landowners need to take into account. We're talking with Jeffrey Winnick and Scott Pugh of Regions Private Wealth Management. Guys, welcome to Hunting Land. Before we get into trust and estate planning for landowners, tell us a little bit about yourself. Jeff, we'll start with you. What do you do with Regions?
Thanks, Joseph. Appreciate the opportunity to be on your show today. I am a senior wealth strategist for Regions Private Wealth, and I basically provide support to multiple different wealth teams in the different areas in multiple states. And usually get involved when there's more complex planning needs and complex asset structures.
Scott, what about you?
Thanks. I have been a registered forester in Alabama for a little over 25 years. I've worked for the trust department during that time. And kind of like Jeff, just support personal trust and, you know, just basic timber management for our clients.
I'm excited to have both of y'all's perspective today because there's the financial planning side and then there's the boots on the ground side. I know I'm doing my best to get out there and try to expose my boys to what we're doing on the property, expose my wife to what we're doing on the property, you know, and give them an understanding, even though it sometimes seems to put them to sleep on the car ride there. But you know, it is important to have a good plan in place that takes into account what you hope will be your legacy, and but also takes care of the people that are, you know, going to be there after you're gone. Before we jump into the ins and outs of that, let's get everybody on the same page with regards to an estate plan, you know, if you need one in the first place. I mean, so before we even talk about if you need one, what is it, Jeff? What exactly is an estate plan?
Well, an estate plan is basically a combination of written directions and often and most often documentation that basically puts in writing your wishes on how you want to distribute assets at death. Most people are familiar with wills and trusts being the most common documents that are involved in estate planning. But estate planning also can have a broader perspective as well. For instance, it might include beneficiary designations that you might have on IRAs or employer retirement plans, life insurance or annuities. You can have bank accounts or brokerage accounts that can have beneficiary designations, or you can hold property titled jointly, which might, if it's titled with joint with right of survivorship, would pass to a surviving owner. So there's different ways besides wills and trusts that you can pass property at death. And if you look at all of these different methods combined, that is really what an estate plan consists of. And that's at death. But let me also add that there's also estate planning during lifetime, because planning for incapacity or disability or making decisions about what type of elections you're going to make on your retirement plan or your IRA. Those are things that are done during your lifetime, but that's also estate planning. So estate planning can be a lot broader than just a will or a trust.
Yes, sir. I actually just kind of went through this. We had our second child and we have consolidated some things. So we're trying to go through all these things. A lot of the things you just mentioned, they're not that fun to talk about, but you know, you do need to have your ducks in a row for, you know, whatever may happen. You mentioned the will and the trust there. What is the biggest problems that having an estate plan solve?
Well, look, you know, first of all, I'll say that everyone should have an estate plan as long as you're of legal age and competent to make a plan. And that just means that you're looking forward and thinking about what happens for different events that could happen in the future. And one of the things that it solves is that it's a matter of putting your intentions in writing so that how you want things to be handled for different life events and different happenings is going to be honored. So for instance, if you don't have a will in most states, there is what they call the laws of intestacy, which will basically set forth how your assets are distributed according to state statute. So rather than leaving it to the state default provisions, why not go ahead and put those provisions in writing yourself? And of course, as I mentioned before, you have beneficiary designations as well and different titlings that can have a result for your estate plan. But the main thing it solves is it gives you a guarantee of how things are going to occur rather than leaving it to uncertainty and question.
Of course, you can do an estate plan for any type of land ownership. I mean, Butch and I are both recreational timberland owners. Scott, on your side of things, having an estate plan with regards to timberland ownership, what kind of problems have you seen that solve, or what kind of problems have you seen arise when somebody didn't have a good plan?
Yes, I have a good example of this. So if you have a landowner, let's say he has 1,000 acres, and we've come up with a plan, you know, for income flow over the years, for timber growth. He's a recreational guy. He likes to turkey hunt. He likes to deer hunt. You know, some of the family members use the property for this. Some don't. If that individual does not have an estate plan for his timberland, and it's not, and he owns it individually, not with a right of survivorship, then let's say he has 3 kids. Well, all of a sudden, you have 4 heirs that own 250 acres apiece or an undivided interest in 1,000 acres. Well, it's pretty impossible to get 4 people to agree on anything because there's going to be one that lives out of state that wants money. There's going to be one that help daddy every day plow the fields and wants to keep all the land. And
another one wants to sell it all.
Another one wants to sell it all. So having a plan for your timber from both an inheritance standpoint and a management standpoint will keep all that intact. Because even if you have a plan for the inheritance of it and you don't have a plan for the to continue your management plan, well, now you're not managing 1,000 acres anymore. You're managing 4 250-acre tracts. Mm-hmm. And the income becomes different. The management, the overall management plan becomes different. So it's helpful to, if your desire is to keep it intact, you know, what I see as a professional forester is get a plan, have your beneficiaries spelled out and your management plan spelled out.
Yes, sir. That is something that I've never even considered before, Scott. I just want to clarify exactly what you're talking about and make sure that I understand what you're talking about. You know, you have 500 acres of 30-year-old longleaf, and in your estate planning, you want it very well mapped out. I mean, does it get as detailed as, you know, when to burn the sections and when to cut and when to thin? Is that what I'm understanding?
It does. It does. So, you know, if you have a good management plan, and your management plan is never static. It needs to be somewhat fluid because conditions change, you know, weather, markets, so on and so forth. But for the most part, static with a little bit of flexibility in there, I guess is what I should say, in my opinion. But you know, if once it becomes fractional ownership, once that 500 acres you mentioned, you said 500 acres, you know, if you had five children and all of a sudden everybody owns 100 acres now instead of 500, well, if you put 500 acres of timber on the market, you're going to get one price for that versus putting 100 acres of timberland on the market. You're probably going to get a lesser price for that. Same trees, but it's just it's the way the market works. It's
almost impossible to divide 500 acres into 100 acre parcels anyway.
Almost impossible.
You know, I know it seems like you see that bickering amongst family members, unfortunately, because I've never met anybody that said, boy, I hope when I'm gone, the family just has a knockdown, drag out fight about what to do with all this. Like, you know, it's something that nobody wants to see happen. But nonetheless, I mean, I don't know. My dad's always told me that his plan is to let his last check bounce. So I don't know what that means in terms of what kind of estate planning he's done. I'm trying to, you know, teach my boys a little bit differently, yeah. I guess. But
I probably wouldn't be counting on much if I were you there.
Sounds like he is planning on spending it all.
Right, yeah.
Correct.
Well, Joe, let me also...
His estate plan is to spend it.
That's right.
Yeah, well, let me also say that, you know, just in general, I think that individuals at home that own, you know, a fair amount of land in their estate planning can be the most important. Like, we gave the example where all the land was forest land, but you have instances, for instance, maybe part of the land is for row crops, some of it's for ranching, some of it's timber, some of it's the homestead, and you have four kids. Who gets what? How do you divide it up, especially where you haven't directed who gets what? And it can be really difficult for families to figure all that out. Whereas if you put those directions in a will or in a trust and indicate how it's to be divided, how it's to be used, sometimes you have family property that children live out of state. Certain ones may use it, some may not, but you have to decide and think in advance. You want that to continue to be a family homestead or something that you want to keep for multi-generations. And if so, maybe you provide a financial reserve as an example to be able to do the upkeep for that property so that those individuals that don't live or live nearby and not going to use it aren't going to be responsible and getting into squabbles about who pays taxes and who does the upkeep when they're not using it. So an estate plan is just really more or less forward thinking about how your land is to be used beyond your use of it. And that's irrespective of doing strategies for tax purposes or otherwise.
I like it. And I like the idea of also, you know, there is the financial side of it and the relationship side of it, but also like the idea, you know, Scott, of just, you know, leaving your heirs a good plan, you know, like,
yeah,
hey,
there's no question. You don't have to fight about it.
I can't
correct.
Tell you how
you
many
don't
times.
Have to fight about it.
Right.
And Joseph, you mentioned earlier, you know, very hard to divide up just an acre of land.
Mm-hmm.
Very true. So I'll give you a worst case scenario that I've seen before where you got five people. They can't agree on what to do because there was no plan in place. You know, you were right. I can't. It would be impossible for me to divide 1 acre perfectly evenly five ways. But guess what? I can divide a dollar bill five ways.
Right.
So in that scenario, when no one can agree and everybody's got to, you know, everybody's got input, no one can agree. You know, I've actually seen people sell the land, and then because you can divide the money evenly, and
right,
you know, that's sad for the person who passed away, who wanted everybody to keep the land. It's sad for the individuals that wanted to keep daddy's land intact and couldn't mm-hmm. afford it or something like that.
Yeah. Not only being able to, you know, keep the land intact and not, you know, I talked to countless people who their wish is for that land to never be sold. They want it to stay in the family, but on the other side of that coin, they don't tell the family what has to be done to manage that property in a sustainable fashion. And so everybody's looking at it going, well, I could have a condo at the beach and I could have this, that, and the other.
Correct.
When in
Correct.
Reality, we all know, you know, it's the goose that laid the golden egg if it's managed correctly.
You know, and if I'm your forester and you and I have got a plan and we're going to thin this block, you know, next year, and then we're going to clear cut this other block in 3 years, and we're going to burn this block this year. And, you know, we got all these plans. If it's not written down and daddy, you know, and I'm using daddy for example, we also have obviously lady landowners, but, or I've worked with lady landowners in the past, but if daddy doesn't have that written down and the heirs don't know the professional forester, they don't know that we have a plan for the timber. And so your management plan changes immediately, which could greatly affect your income stream on your timberland.
Can turn into a nightmare too, because all right, we just harvested some timber, everybody gets a check, but now we need to replant, and everybody's going, well, I don't necessarily want to replant, you know. I'm not wanting to put, you know. So then you've got one side that's going, no, that's not how you do it. I know you know, but
no doubt.
We got to do it. Not everybody's on the same page.
I have dealt with that in my own family.
Mm-hmm.
My daddy had a lot of brothers.
Yeah.
and Hurricane Ivan, just using it for an example, Hurricane Ivan just decimated even though our land was 200 miles inland, Hurricane Ivan decimated it. You know, luckily they had a registered forester in the family, and I took care of the trees best I could. But then when it was time to replant, well, you know, some wanted to, some didn't. The ones that wanted to weren't going to pay to replant land that someone else owned a fractional interest in that they were not going, that, you know, that didn't want to plant, for example.
Yep.
Hey, Joe, if I can add also that there's also some creative solutions that can also be helpful if there's pre-planning while the person's alive, and open communication with your family, it can't be encouraged enough, so that you're asking people, you know, your children, well, whose preferences are to have the land, who really wants it, and have an open discussion. So example, there might be other assets to equalize, so the children that don't really want to really own the land get other assets and aren't pulled into that discussion about the land. You sometimes can have first right of refusal saying, look, you know, if it's my brother that really wants to work that property, or my sister and her husband, let them purchase it and put good, reasonable terms in your will or your trust, indicating how that purchase is supposed to take place and make it fair. It could be that you keep it for a period of time to accommodate things happening in certain people's lives. Like maybe my sister lives with my mom at the homestead, and I want to keep that home there as long as she's living there and my mom's alive. But then once my mom's deceased, then you allow it to be sold. So I guess the key is to really think forward about the land and how it's being used in the family dynamic and circumstances. And you could pretty much draft anything that, you know, you want, as long as it's legal and compliant with state law, you can pretty much put anything in there that makes sense for the family as to how you want things operated and run as it relates to the land owned by the family.
Glad you brought up the example of looking at the assets as a whole. And, you know, maybe you've got, you know, I can use my family as an example, but like, you know, my childhood home that I grew up in, my parents still live in, it means a lot to me from a nostalgia standpoint, but I don't live there anymore. If my sister, for example, wanted to live in that home, I would want her to, and I wouldn't want her to have to buy my brother and I out of it, you know, just live there, you know, like that's awesome. Those kind of things could become a big problem. I could see that easily if it wasn't talked about beforehand. Is there ever a scenario where someone should consider transferring their property, their assets, before death?
Yeah, well, let me first say that we often, you know, we'll see sometimes people become so worried about probate that they'll transfer their home to their children thinking that they're saving their kids the problems or costs associated with probate when it's really a pretty straightforward process. But what they haven't realized is they've taken this home property that they've had for 50 years and has close to a zero cost basis. And the way the laws work, when you transfer property as a general rule to somebody else and you gift it to them, then they acquire your cost basis so that when they sell it, they're going to have to pay taxes on that appreciation that you didn't pay. Now, on the other hand, if you wait till you decease, then they forgive that appreciation. They have what they call a step up in cost basis. And the heirs who now receive it at death, you know, will not have to pay the capital gains taxes. Now, and especially I'll see somebody who's 85 years old and they're just worried about probate and they transfer the deed over to their kids. Now, that aside, there's always tax reasons to do it. Is probably the most common reason to transfer land, particularly downstream, to the next generation or even multiple generations down. But, you know, there's different ways of transferring it. You don't have to transfer the entire title. Sometimes you can keep a life estate or a life interest to allow you to continue living there. Sometimes it can be a partial interest. Sometimes you might hold property inside of an LLC or a corporation or a business entity of some kind, and you give interest in the company as opposed to the land itself. And now the owner keeps control of that land through the business entity, yet you have pieces of the property given away to the family members. And that's a very common way that property is transferred downstream, because most landowners are very concerned about retaining control, even if they want to share the equity of the land with the next generation or be willing to transfer downstream for tax savings purposes. And a lot of times you combine that strategy with the use of different types of trusts and you get a really good planning result using business entities and trusts together and getting that land downstream. The main thing is to make sure that the techniques accommodate your owner's wishes for control if that's a desire to keep control during their remaining lifetime.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. Farm Credit of Northwest Florida. Farm Credit of Northwest Florida has over a century of experience providing financing for people who live, work, or play in the country. Farm Credit is here to help you make your dream of country living a reality. Their unique cooperative structure allows them to return some of their profits back to their borrowers. This patronage distribution effectively lowers a borrower's rate. To get started with your first or next land purchase, give them a call at 855-GO-RURAL or visit them at www.gorural.net. Texas Hunter, Since 1954, Texas Hunter Products has produced the best engineered and finest quality feeders and hunting blinds in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality and durability. By sticking to premium standards, the company delivers tough, long-lasting products that meet the real-life needs of anglers and hunters across America. Their fish feeders, deer feeders, hunting blinds, and outdoor accessories are among the highest rated in the industry. You can trust that your purchase from Texas Hunter Products will meet your needs for generations to come. To learn more, visit TexasHunter.com. Bucks Island Marine. At BucksIsland.com, you can check out the full list of inventory from new and used bass, pontoon, and bow rider style boats, new and used motors, as well as kayaks. They love trade-ins, which provides a steady stream of used boats, and they can rig your boat at their 18-bay service department or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians, so visit them at 4500 Highway 77 in Southside, Alabama, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Jeff, you talked about taxes. You know, you talked about those beneficiaries and, you know, trying to mitigate some of the bickering that can happen. What would you advise landowners to think about when it comes to their estate plan and kind of going through a checklist?
Yeah, well, I think number one is, you know, when you're talking to your advisors, defining how you perceive that land. And you may have different parcels for different purposes. So what is legacy land that you plan on and want to keep in the family? What is land that you, in the ideal world, like to keep at a legacy, but also know that you've sent off your kids to, one's in law school now, one's an accountant, and they're not willing to come back to a small town in Mississippi in the future, even though you would have liked to have that happen, or that land can't support six kids, but it supported you, and there's not enough adjacent land around to acquire to accommodate that wish, and being realistic about then what's the game plan for that. Should it be tenant farm for some period of time and used as a diversified investment? Or should it be sold, sharecropped? You know, how are you going to do that if it's not meant to stay in the family as a legacy? And if you're looking at it as an investment and you have a future plan for it, share that plan with the family. Say no, that you bought that land and, you know, you're using it right now to, you know, as grazing land for cattle. But your intention all along wasn't to continue it that way. Your plan is, you know, X, and you see that the development's occurring this way, or you saw that a company was bought out here, bought land and building out a factory, and your plan is to build a, you know, convenience store and some other facilities for the residents out there that will come in 10 or 15 years. And so if you've defined that and your family knows your intentions, they know, and your advisors can help you plan accordingly to, you know, build your will and your trust around those intentions. Number two is, if you are facing taxes and of the estate tax variety, then things to think about are liquidity and thinking how is a family going to raise the liquidity to pay the taxes? And if some of that land is going to be sold, how might it be parceled out? What's the most important part of that land to keep? And is a homestead property more important than anything? Or, you know, can we take advantage of different ways of parceling out that land for different purposes? And then if it's going to be kept again in the family, how's it to be divided and which children get what part of it? Is it divisible? And if in the end it's a complex 1,000 acres, it has a lot of different uses, think in terms of maybe using an LLC, a corporation, a trust, to put the one or two people in charge who really are going to run the operation. And even though all the family members and even going another generation might benefit from cash flow that comes, the right people are in charge, who should be in charge running the operation, running the land, handling leases if there's tenant farmers or sharecropping. So, you know, and hire a good timber manager.
Yeah.
if there's timber out there to manage it for you, if your family doesn't really understand the business. I mean, one thing, Scott, you might, in wrapping up, mention is that I know that a lot of times we can serve as a bridge. You know, it's always interesting when you have a family generation that isn't really interested in the timber business, but then you have grandchildren that are out riding their three-wheeler or four-wheeler out there, you know, running with the crews going out in between the trees, and all of a sudden they're interested and one becomes a forester. So how often is it that, Scott, you find us being a bridge to the next generation?
Often, very often. You know, there's a lot, that hadn't occurred to me till you just said it, Jeff, but there's a lot of people who have land, and the beneficiaries that use the land the most are the grandkids.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they want their grandkids to keep it. So they come up with a plan. They pass away for their kids, which are the parents of the grandkids, obviously, and you know, come up with a succession plan to pass it down.
Can you put a provision in there? The way my three-year-old's been acting, I'm kind of thinking we might need some bail money, you know, like put something in there for that. But,
Jeff,
you know.
Jeff kind of mentioned this, but over the years, it's been my experience, you know, just as a forester, when you're dealing with multiple generations and multiple people in that generation, I know we keep saying that, you know, it depends and come up with a plan. Also, don't be scared to put someone in charge that will make your plan come to fruition. You know, if you put your, it could be anybody. It could be your youngest kid. It could be your oldest kid. You know, obviously they're adults and I'm calling them kids, but you know what I mean. It could be your oldest kid. It could be your youngest kid. It could be a forester. It could be a asset manager. Put someone in charge, and that person is going to have to be the bad guy from time to time, because, you know, you're always going to have somebody that doesn't agree with daddy's plan. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, if you get somebody qualified and that person has to be the bad guy from time to time, everyone will see in the end that everybody still benefits from that.
You know, the last thing I think about with an estate plan is the cost, of course, of doing it. In so many different scenarios in life, you find that if you had spent a little money up front, it would have saved you a tremendous amount on the back end. When it comes to estate planning, can you talk a little bit about the cost to value equation in a way that helps people understand why it's worth it to do it, spend the money, and just, is there a general rule of thumb on how much it's going to cost to put together an estate plan? I'm sure as complexity increases, cost increases, but, you know, is this something that at any level, the root of my question is, a lot of times timber's this way, Scott, you know, like what a guy who has 1,000 acres can do is not necessarily the same thing that a guy who has 40 acres can do. But does that same type of thinking apply to estate planning? Should somebody with 40 acres put down the money to come up with an estate plan just as somebody who's got 10,000?
Right. You know, I can only speak to the timber aspect of it, but I know for a fact, without a doubt, hiring a professional timber manager will greatly pay dividends. See people, I've seen a lot of people over the years, you know, they're going to do it themselves, or they're not going to replant. You know, if your average, this isn't necessarily the right, you know, as far as general society goes, but, you know, if you have a landowner selling his timber, he's going to get a price, but more times than not, a professional registered forester can get him a better price and thereby paying for his fee. And then I see other people, I've seen so many people over the years, well, you know, we're not going to pay to replant. Won't the trees grow back? They certainly will. But I've said this for years, and it's been proven time and time and time again. You get a professional forester, you spend the money to spray, burn, plant your forest, you will get that money back on the first thinning job. Mm-hmm. And again, we're generations into thinning in the first thin, second thin clear cuts, and you know that professional job pays for itself. You know, nothing's perfect, but that professional job pays for itself 99% of the time.
Good information.
Jeff, on the estate planning side, talk a little bit about, you know, the cost of value, or maybe the risk cost-wise of not doing it.
Yeah, well, let me first say that, you know, like any profession, you know, attorneys, estate planning attorneys and estate planning professionals come with different levels of experience at different ages. Some have been practicing for 30 years, some for only a few years. But, you know, people also come with different life experiences coming into the practice of law. Just because somebody's younger and doesn't have as many years behind them doesn't mean that they don't have a lot of life experience ahead of that, that really gives them a great sense about estate planning or about land ownership for that matter. If they grew up in a family of landowners and watched that, how that was managed and handled. But in general, I think a general good recommendation is to find someone through word of mouth that you know, and you can be blunt and ask that they, the highest percentage of their practice as an attorney is in the area of estate planning. And I think that if you find that person, you will be in good shape and better shape than otherwise. And let me also say that if you don't know who those people are, you can talk to your local, a private wealth shop with one of the banks or other financial institutions, financial planner, CPA. There's a lot of people that will know that you can surround yourself with that will get you to a good estate planning attorney. And that's only one person on the team. We always, you know, have advocated a team approach here at Regions. And I think that that goes across the board, whether it's, you know, here or another financial institution, having somebody that is helping you on the financial planning or wealth planning side, looking at projecting out retirement and your overall helping you talk through some of these things, working with your CPA, with an attorney, maybe with your, you have a transactional attorney that handles land or farm operations, your timber expert or other people, bring them all together, let them communicate, make sure that they all are looking at this for you, because every professional looks at things from their own perspective. But if you get each of their perspectives and combine it and you have open communication, I think you get a better overall result. And so take a team approach. The cost, you know, there's some attorneys will charge a few hundred dollars an hour. Some will charge $700 an hour. I think that in the end, if you're more worried about the cost per hour, you know, what's the cost of peace of mind? You know, right. And I think that let that go, just as long as you know that person is being responsive to you, gets things done, you know, answers questions, gets the job done for you. And if they're that have that reputation, I think you should be in good shape.
I'm glad you bring that up. That's probably a good way to wrap it up. I have found as I've gotten older, a lot of times the more you pay someone, the faster they get it done, and the less you end up spending it, you know, in the long run.
And cheaper is not always better.
You know, I mean, to take it back to your world, Scott, I mean, if you got a guy running a bobcat with a forestry mulcher and you got another guy running a skidder with a forestry mulcher, one's a lot more per hour than the other one, but that big skidder gets a lot more done in that hour.
Getting a heck of a lot more done.
Yeah. So you can't always look at it from the cost per hour. A lot of times you're paying for value.
You can't. I mean, we look at that a lot in, you know, bulldozers are a great example of what you just said. Bulldozers are normally a dollar per horsepower per hour. So a 80 horsepower bulldozer is $80 an hour, and a 120 horsepower bulldozer is $120 an hour. But you'll get a lot more done in that hour with that $120, which is what you're saying. And I'm agreeing with you.
Well, let me add one last thing, though, is this. Is regardless of what somebody's cost is per hour or what their cost is, some people are just really good time managers. Some people are great at follow-up and follow-through, and they have great staff and get things done very quickly for you and are very thorough. And I think in the end, that's just as important as a price. And if you find, you know, that person, that's a real gift to find that team, you know, that everyone's responsive and you know it's important for you to get the job done timely, and they'll stay on task for you.
Yeah, no doubt. And just make you feel, like you said it earlier, make you feel confident in what you're doing, that it's being done in a thorough manner. And really, you can enjoy the process as much as you can enjoy that process. Guys, this has been a good, I call it a primer of sorts for estate planning for landowners. I hope we have stimulated some questions in people's minds because, of course, their situation is going to be different. If they want to reach out to Regions Private Wealth Management, get in touch with you guys, and discuss their estate planning needs, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, I would say best way is to go into your closest Regions branch and talk to the branch manager there, one of the customer service reps, and ask them to put you in touch with one of the representatives from Private Wealth. And, they'll do that. And you'll probably be contacted by one of our wealth advisors, after which they can always get in touch with one of the specialists like myself or Scott if we're needed to assist.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. This week's show is brought to you by Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. This stuff is so important, Butch, but it's an awkward conversation to have.
Yeah. Yep. Like I mentioned, kind of done a little bit of this here recently, trying to get our ducks in a row for our little children's. Yeah. It's not that fun. You know, I had to have a couple conversations with Melissa. You know, I don't want you to make the call to have to pull the plug or, you know, just stuff like that. But I think that's definitely what I picked up from this podcast. I really enjoyed having Scott and Jeff on. You can obviously tell they're very knowledgeable about what they're doing, but man, just talk about it. Like I know it's probably going to be awkward to talk to your son or your father about this, about what's going to happen to the land once something does happen to you. Cause you know, I mean, I might be a man, but I'm a Superman, but something's definitely going to happen to me eventually. Right. You know what I mean? So let's talk about it. I think that's the biggest thing I picked up is communication, because what's the other option? It's not going to get any better if you know, something does happen and then you have no idea what's going on. You don't know what to do to be able to keep the farm in your family or your kid's family.
Right. Yes.
Communication.
It's a big deal. And, it may seem like an awkward conversation to have right now. It's better than, you know, leaving your family to bicker. And I've seen families divided over this. You know?
Yeah. Oh, you hear, I mean, that's one of the, you hear it all the time, horror stories, just like those guys were saying, you know, brother doesn't want it, sister wants it. One brother says, man, let's just cash this thing out. And the other brother's like, man, I've been growing up here my whole life. I have memories here, that tree over there. It's more than just land and money.
Well, and then it's also like, you know, with two boys, I can use this against them. You know, I can pit them against each other and be like, well, I kind of think, you know, the oldest, you're in the lead for right now, you know, It's a contest. It's a constant contest until I'm gone.
Keep trying.
I'm not sure what I'm going to do.
That's right. Well, I mean, that might be a little messed up, but yeah, I mean, at least you're communicating with them.
That grass has not been cut in like 6 days. First one out. Maybe he's getting 60-40 split on this.
And then we'll see you next time.
Right. You know? Another thing I took away from this, Butch, which I really like. I like the idea of having a forest management plan incorporated into my estate plan so that my boys but think about it like from a grandchildren, great grandchildren, they're going to be able to look back and see, this is how granddaddy was trying to do this. He was doing prescribed fire. He wanted to convert this to longleaf. He wanted to, you know, manage this timber stand, you know, in a savanna type management as opposed to, you know, a plantation forest, having that plan. And we talk about so many of these things, whether it's no-till food plots or prescribe fire, you know, removing invasives, like all that stuff, you can get it down and spelled out with your family. Hey, work with a consultant forester and do these things to keep this property sustainably managed. Because that's one of the most interesting things about land ownership for me is I'm a first generation landowner, and I'm biting the bullet, you know, with my work, my effort, my income generation over my lifetime to purchase a piece of property that I'm then just going to be able to give that to the next generation and hopefully inspire them to just continue to manage it and hang on to it. And they won't have to bite that bullet. Maybe they'll get the bug and want to buy their own piece, and maybe they can buy the piece next door, whatever, but they won't have to do that. They will get the benefit of that. I'd never even heard of putting a forest management into a state plan.
No. I've never heard of definitely did not know it was something that you could put into something for future implementation. I mean, and it doesn't even have to be multi-generational. They were saying you need to update these things pretty regularly. Sure. Scott was saying that his has changed, you know, a lot in the last 10 years with just the changing of the climate and recreational property changing, et cetera. But I mean, if something happened to you, whatever, you know, if something happened to you within the year, you think Stephanie's going to know when to thin the back 80?
Right. I
mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, way in the future. It's something that, yeah, I'd never even thought about that before, but that was definitely very cool to know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm eat up with this stuff and I research it and read about it. And sometimes I'll go to talk with my wife about it, and I'll realize that she's maybe, you know, taking about 5 to 10% in of what I'm saying all the time.
Right.
I don't, you know, that she's got plenty of things she's interested in that I'm not really listening on. That's fine. Sure. But a plan is a good place to start from. And it's not it doesn't mean your family can't change their plan. It doesn't mean they can't enjoy that land and manage that land in the way they want to, but at least they know how you wanted it done to build off of that.
They have a place to start. That's right.
There's so many aspects of land ownership. That's what
there is.
I enjoy this podcast for that reason, is being able to dive off into every aspect. And we haven't even scratched the surface. Good conversation today.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This thing could have gone hours and hours and hours. We barely just tipped the surface a little bit. But yes, I enjoyed this one as well.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen, so here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. You'll join our email list, and wherever you are listening to podcasts, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. You got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.